The United Kingdom is in uncharted territory. The British Parliament has fallen silent, suspended by Prime Minister Boris Johnson, just weeks before the deadline to leave the European Union. That suspension led to protests on the street and some real uproar in the House of Commons.
That it require advice on order from you, Mr. Stewart. You're a master of disorder, man. Mr. Stewart, if you don't like it, you're perfectly entitled to your view. I couldn't give a flying flamingo what your view is.
I'm going to use that one, a flying flamingo. Britain's exit from the EU, better known as Brexit, can seem like anything from a farcical government meltdown to an international disaster to a problem that's happening to those folks over there. Maybe it's a bit of all three, but what's really going on? Joining us from London is the BBC's UK politics correspondent, Rob Watson. Rob, welcome to the program.
Well, it's good to be with you, Josh, and hello to everybody else.
We also welcome your questions for Rob about Brexit or what you're expecting from Brexit, particularly if it's going to impact you, if there's anything that you are concerned about or looking forward to from Brexit. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A or email 1A@wamu.org. Rob, let's start with that clip that we played at the beginning with that gentleman saying, I couldn't give a flying flamingo what your view. Who was that and what was that?
So that was the Speaker of Parliament, of the House of Commons, the elected chamber, Mr. John Bercow. And actually, it's really interesting that you played that clip and the way you framed this at the start, that what on earth is going on in the UK? Well, it sort of can sound like an international comedy show, like I'm not sure if any of the older listeners to this show will remember Monty Python, where it's sort of surreal comedy. And you know, I mean, it is that in part. But I should try and say this, which I hope will set the scene. What Britain is experiencing is not, it's not really a problem with the system. I mean, old-fashioned though it is, going back to the 17th century and beyond. It's not a constitutional crisis. It's got nothing to do with Her Majesty the Queen. What we have in Britain is the most profound political crisis since 1945, since the end of the war. Why do I say that? Because essentially we had a vote in 2016, where people were just asked, do you want to stay in the European Union or leave? And they voted to leave. And basically, ever since that point, the politicians have been trying to struggle what to do. So, you know, some people think that the Leave campaign during the referendum, don't worry, I'll shut up in a second, was so dishonest that we should have another referendum and try and remain. There's another group of politicians who think, look, it's a kind of a bad idea leaving the European Union, but hey, you know, democracy is democracy. We've got to try and think of a way of making this work and maybe have a deal, a good, close relationship with the EU. And then there's the third lot of politicians who tend to think that Brexit is a fabulous idea and are not worried about leaving the European Union without some formal deal. So that is why we are in this almighty mess that has polarized the country like nothing else since the 17th century. But it is a political crisis. It's caused by an honest, difficult disagreement between politicians, and in this country we seem to have lost the art of compromise, and that's why I say it is the worst crisis since 1945.
So much so that at the moment Parliament is suspended. It's been prorogued, as the term goes. It's not even in session.
No, and again, just in the last few hours, that has produced yet another twist in this political crisis, and that is Scotland's highest court has ruled that Mr. Johnson, the Prime Minister, acted illegally when he did that unlawfully, because he did so in order to try and avoid parliamentary political scrutiny of his plans for Brexit. And even worse than that, if you can believe it, Joshua, that in doing so and suspending Parliament unlawfully, which has to have the Queen's permission, that he had given us some bad advice. I mean, effectively, had lied to the Queen.
We will hear part of Prime Minister Johnson's response to the complaints about him suspending Parliament when we continue with the BBC's Rob Watson. We'll also get to some of your questions, including, frankly, why, if you are an American, you should even care about Brexit. Stay close. Back now to our conversation with the BBC's Rob Watson about Brexit. We welcome your questions and thoughts, 1A@WAMU.org. As we mentioned, Parliament is suspended at the behest of Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson, and he has defended his decision to do so. Here he is speaking this week to Sky News.
And this stuff about it being anti-democratic, I mean, don in one and break. What a load of nonsense. We were very, very clear that if people wanted a democratic moment, if they wanted an election, we offered it to the Labour opposition, and mysteriously they decided not to go for it. So we're going to get on.
That's British Prime Minister Boris Johnson speaking to Sky News. Rob Watson, help us understand this. I mean, if the President of the United States suspended Congress for a reason other than, you know, some kind of a physical threat that they had to evacuate for, we'd be pretty upset. But this is a very different kind of government than the U.S. has. Is this unprecedented? Has this ever happened before?
It's different, and it's not. But I go back to my point. This is not about some breakdown in the system or the constitution. So it's true that normally at this time of the year, British Parliament is suspended because we have in this country party political conferences, which are kind of like the conventions you have in the United States during the election cycle, where the Democrats get together in one city, Republicans get together. And we do that every year here. And so what was controversial about what Mr. Johnson did is he suspended Parliament. And obviously, we're in the middle of a national crisis. So there was some suggestion that maybe this year, maybe that kind of period in which Parliament is suspended for politicians to go off to the seaside and to these conventions, might have been put on hold this year. And so there was this sense, and that's really what's been discussed in the Scottish court, that when Mr. Johnson said, hey, this is just like normal business every year, what he was really trying to do was to avoid parliamentary scrutiny of his Brexit plans. But I should say, Joshua, you have to understand this is a deeply polarized country. And so those people, by and large, the 17.4 million people who voted to leave the European Union, they think all this kind of stuff is just baloney and Parliament trying to get in the way, the courts trying to stop them having what they want, which is Britain leaving the European Union.
Is that what it is? Is Parliament trying to get in the way?
I wouldn't put it that way as such. I'd go back to the original point that I made, Joshua, that, you know, a lot of, I think in many ways, a lot of, dare I say this, sort of journalists and maybe many voters are kind of lazy about this and say it is, you know, those wretched politicians, Parliament, it's all rubbish, what are they up to? Look, it is just an immensely complex issue, Britain leaving the European Union. And I go back to that original point. I don't think that it's, you know, politicians necessarily being, you know, horrible or stupid or whatever. They just have a genuine disagreement. I mean, as I said, you know, as a whole chunk of politicians who think that the entire Leave campaign was so, as they would see it, dishonest. It would make more sense to have another referendum and ask the people again, now they can see what Brexit might entail and that it might not be all, milk and honey. And, you know, and there's another group of politicians who say, no, look, we really have got to leave the European Union, but we need a deal. We need to do it properly. But then they can't agree on what deal. And then, as I said, you've got these sort of the Brexit enthusiasts who say, look, we just got to leave. You know, let's work all the details out later. And, you know, the fundamental problem is that Britain's 650 MPs, they can't all unite around one way of dealing with the result of that referendum. I mean, it's both as simple and as complex as that.
We got plenty of good questions from listeners, but I just want to get your sense of why this has been so very polarizing. The issues now are economic, you know, trade deals, borders between Ireland and Northern Ireland, which is not purely economic, but also certainly, you know, cultural and has a lot of very real serious history behind it. But the campaign, the Leave campaign, is led by UKIP, the UK Independence Party, was very cultural. Many argued that it was xenophobic, if not at times outright racist. So what's really under all this?
Well, if I am, I have to pay you a compliment there, Joshua. You've done your homework. I mean, it is extraordinary the way Britain is polarized. I said earlier on, you know, there's been nothing like this since the 17th century. So you're right. I mean, normally in British politics, The division that we have, most people would understand it, right? I mean, it tends to be along lines of class, wealth, and to some extent, geography. I mean, that's the way traditionally Britain has been. Brexit has changed all that because it's more about the politics of identity. And the way I've seen it described is that, by and large, those who voted Remain are the kind of people who are comfortable with an element of supranationalism, that is, Britain being part of a wider political structure in the European Union. They're comfortable with globalization and everything that that involves, the changes in trade, and they're comfortable with immigration. I mean, they're comfortable that when they kind of look around that Britain isn't, how could I put this, it doesn't, not as, I don't know, maybe as sort of white British as it used to be, that it just looks different. And that those people who voted Leave, by contrast, you know, they're much more nationalistic. I mean, they have much more of a sense that Britain is a different kind of European country. They're not as comfortable with globalization. On immigration, they would say, you know, it's not that we're racist, but just that nobody ever asked us if it would be a good idea, you know, if 3 million EU nationals came to live here. And so that is the way in which Britain has become immensely polarized. Although I add just one thing that sort of cheered me up the other day, yesterday morning. I opened my mail, my inbox, and I had an email from an academic institution in the UK which said, you know, yes, Britain has become kind of polarized on this Remain-Leave thing in the same way that often the United States is polarized. But actually, some other research said there are ways in which British people are converging in things like their attitude to race, to same-sex marriage, to how you deal with an aging population. So it kind of looks really grim at the moment, Joshua, but maybe there are some glimmers of hope for the future.
Let's get to some questions from our listeners. Brando wrote on our Facebook page, "While I think the decision to leave the EU is ultimately against their own self-interest and will likely have long-term economic repercussions, why should I or other Americans care if Britain leaves the EU with or without a deal?" Rob?
That's a very good question, and there are all sorts of ways of answering it. I mean, I guess what you would say in a sort of geostrategic way is that, if you think about it, what is it, as an American, what is it that the United States, before Donald Trump came along, had always wanted? It wanted a united West. It wanted a united Europe. It had been, you know, U.S. foreign policy, an absolute cornerstone of U.S. foreign policy, that you guys wanted a united Europe, a kind of, you know, what was it that Kissinger famously said, you know, who'd you call in Europe? So they'd wanted a united Europe with Britain as America's closest ally, at the heart of it, sort of shaping the European Union in a way that the United States would have liked. So, you know, the idea that the sort of solidarity of the West, or at least this bit of the West, is up in the air, would have concerned all other administrations since the war, apart from the current one. And then I guess there are sort of business interests. I mean, if you do a lot of business with the UK, some might think that it's a great opportunity if the United Kingdom is going to pivot more towards the United States in terms of trade and enterprise. Maybe that would be an opportunity. By contrast, you may be the kind of business where you have a headquarters in the UK, and one of the reasons you put your headquarters there was because that gave you instant access to the European Union. And I suppose there's one other thing, and that is that the United States and the UK are incredibly close to each other as countries. I mean, we sort of look upon each other as, how could I? It's like family, right? It's like family. So I guess, you know, if you're an American, you'd be a bit worried that your family members, the other side of the Atlantic, are, you know, a little bit cross with each other at the moment.
Mary Ellen emailed, "I've been wondering if the Queen actually thought it was a good idea to suspend Parliament, or if, as a figurehead, she pretty much has to go along with whatever the current Prime Minister wants." Rob, I'm guessing it was more of the latter, A, because the Queen tries to stay very aggressively apolitical in Britain, and B, because really, that's kind of the relationship between the Crown and the people. The Queen doesn't do day-to-day government, but the people go to the Queen to empanel Parliament, and then she just kind of has to let it do what it wants to do.
You're absolutely right. It's the latter. I mean, the Queen perfectly sensibly stays as far away from the politics in Britain as she humanly can. I mean, that's been one of the keys to her success these last, goodness gracious, how long, 70 years. Just like her predecessors. So there's no doubt about that. And I the story that's in the news at the moment in the UK about the Scottish court ruling that essentially the Prime Minister had misled Her Majesty the Queen, I mean, potentially that is not a great thing for Mr. Johnson. I mean, I know it sounds obvious saying that because, you know, an awful lot of Conservative voters, even if they're dead keen on Brexit and think that, you know, Parliament and the courts have been getting in the way. I mean, I don't think they like the idea very much of her, of, you know, of Her Majesty, of the Queen being in any way misled or sort of dragged into this. I mean, not that she will be. I mean, look, I'm not sort of saying that, you know, that the Queen will get involved, but I think an awful lot of voters will think, my goodness gracious, you know, these politicians should make sure they don't disturb Her Majesty with their disagreements.
I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. A number of our listeners asked about Northern Ireland. EJ tweeted, I worry most about the Northern Ireland border. So many of my friends will be affected. Am I alone in thinking Brexit may bring the breakup of the UK with Northern Ireland reunited with the Irish Republic and an independent Scotland?
That's a very good question from EJ. I mean, during the referendum campaign, some on the Remain side, most notably two former prime ministers, Tony Blair and John Major, warned that that was entirely what might happen. To take Northern Ireland first, which in, you know, in many ways is the one where one has the greatest concern because of the history of violence. I mean, one of the things which has, you know, in a way helped the Troubles fade into history was that, you know, with both Britain and the Irish Republic being members of the European Union, you know, you would never guess that there was a border there. And let's say you're a Catholic in the north of Ireland, and obviously it's the Catholics who traditionally had been more keen on United Ireland. Up until recently, you know, what's not to like? You know, I mean, because of the Good Friday Agreement, if you live in the north, you can be both an Irish citizen and a British citizen. There's no border there. You move around, you trade. And of course, this concern about whether suddenly Northern Ireland and the Republic, which is staying in the EU, the idea that they would have different regulatory regimes and there would need to be checks on animal standards, product standards, you know, that the border suddenly became more like the border between, I don't know, the US and Mexico or the US and Canada. You know, people are thinking, hang on a minute, that could then become a target for paramilitaries. The concern about Scotland, again, is that this would, that Brexit could be seen as a sort of English nationalist movement, that it was England and Wales where there were majorities in the referendum for leaving, but actually in Scotland and in Northern Ireland, majorities voted to remain. So there's that idea that sort of Scotland and England would start to drift apart, and this would be ammunition for a Scottish National Party that wants independence, saying, hey, you know, look at England. It's right now run by a bunch of, you know, right-wing English nationalist conservatives.
Also worth noting that Scotland did vote on going independent back in 2014, and the Scots voted not to go independent, but Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, has asked Boris Johnson, or has floated the idea of a second independence referendum based on what happens in the future. Also glad to hear from some of you about how this is affecting you. One listener emailed, I live in the USA, but I'm a dual national married to a British citizen. Much of our savings is in British pounds, and its value drops daily. We are frustrated over being cut off from the opportunities that come with being an EU citizen, such as freedom of movement and the chance for our kids to study with ease at EU universities. I'm especially frustrated because we were overseas at the time of the referendum, and despite ensuring I was registered to vote absentee, my ballot did not arrive in time. Rob, before I let you go, I wonder what the future looks like. We had one listener, Ollie, who asked if there's a path to canceling Brexit altogether. Bob emailed whether it's time for a vote of confidence, or maybe no confidence, in Boris Johnson to try to get rid of him. That's something that came up with his predecessor, Theresa May. What's the path forward look like?
So I think what's really striking is just how it seems so uncertain how, if, and indeed when, this Brexit crisis ends. I mean, normally any halfway decent political journalist ought to be able to answer your question and say, look, Joshua and everybody listening, here's what I think is going to happen. But we are in such a profound crisis that I think that there is no obvious answer. I mean, I could see it. I could see all of these following options being possible. So one, that Britain leaves the European Union without a deal, either on the 31st of October or after another extension. I could see the membership of the European Union being extended, and the crisis going on. You could sort of see an election where maybe a group of political parties win who decide to have a second referendum and Britain remains in the European Union. I mean, all of these things are still possible. I mean, I think what you can't see, and what would seem to be to me the holy grail in British politics, is who can think of a way of bringing this country back together again? Who can think of a way of bringing us all together and ending the crisis? And as we speak at this moment, Joshua, there's no sign of any particular politician, political party, or even political movement that has cracked the great prize of British politics.
Well, it remains to be seen how the court fight will work out. Of course, it's been through a Scottish court who declared the proroguing of Parliament unconstitutional. We'll see if it goes through the higher courts and if that ruling stands. And Rob Watson will be following it for the BBC. Rob, thanks for your help.
Thanks for giving me all this time, Joshua.
This conversation was produced by Jonquil and Hill. To learn more about our staff, visit the1a.org/staff and check out our podcast on NPR One or any app you like. All the links to listen are at npr.org/1a. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.